Yeah, welcome to QAV, Tony, episode 714, the 2nd of April, 2024. Daniel Kahneman passed away, Tony.
Yeah, I read that. Sad loss. I read about it over Easter. Lots of tributes to him pouring in. And obviously, you know, we're big fans of Thinking Fast and Slow, the book they wrote. And it's, what's it called? The Undoing Project, I think it's called, the Michael Lewis biography of them. It's good.
I never read that. I only heard about that when I read sort of his obits and thought, oh, yeah, I should read that.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So for people who don't know of Daniel Kahneman and haven't read Thinking Fast and Slow, even though we kind of bang on about it all the time, how would you like summarize his work?
He received the Nobel Prize for Economics, even though I think he's really a psychologist, but there's no prize for psychology. So he's one of the pioneers of behavioral economics. And when we talk about things like anchoring and prospect theory, we're talking about work pioneered by Kahneman and his pal Tversky. And so a lot of the concepts that they've come up with are very much embedded in the science of investing, I guess. They kind of, point out all the fallibility of the human mind, and then we kind of invent systems to try and protect ourselves from that when we invest, like having a checklist and a framework to invest.
And also were some of the people to point out that this idea of sort of rational behavior in economic markets isn't really legit. You can't take that seriously because people act irrationally.
Correct. Yeah, even people who are aware of the foibles of the human mind, so who've read the book, still act irrationally and go off and buy Bitcoin or whatever else they do.
And the thing that I took away, like I read Thinking Fast and Slow many years ago for the first time. I read it twice, I think, over the years. But the thing I remember taking away from it the most the first time was that our brains have been engineered by evolution to think irrationally or to make snap judgments, let's say. That like it's not a failure.
No,
it's a design, it's a design feature.
Correct.
That would have saved human lives for most of human history. I think the example I always use with people is, you know, you've got, so he talks about system A and system B, or system one and system two. System one or system A is the part of your brain that makes quick, fast decisions based on gut feeling, instinct.
Mm-hmm.
System two is the slower part of the brain where you carefully think through the logic and the reason and the facts, and you make a slow, hard calculation before you act. And one of the examples I think he used in the book is, you know, you're a primitive person in the Bronze Age, you're walking through a jungle, got a spear in your hand, you hear something that sounds like a twig snap behind you. System two thinking, if you rely on that, you'll stop and won't move and spend 5 minutes thinking through all the possible things that could have made the sound of a twig snap before you act. System one will get you to just swing around and jab with your spear just in case it happens to be a tiger that's about to jump on you. Now, 99.9% of the time, it's probably not going to be a tiger, but, you know, that 0.1% of the time when it is a tiger, the payoff is there. Also, system one thinking requires less calories. Humans had calorie-restricted diets, so it actually burns less calories to make snap judgments rather than to sit and think. It's hard. It's exhausting, as anyone who does it all day, every day knows, to think hard and deep about things. So, our brains have been engineered deliberately through evolutionary processes over a million years to make snap decisions, snap judgments. But of course, in the modern world, you know, that often goes awry when people go, well, you know, COVID vaccines are because Bill Gates wants to put chips in your brain so he can track you. And people go, yeah, that sounds reasonable. Sure, that'll do. I'll just go with that. That sounds fine.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a long history of people exploiting System A and System B thinking for nefarious reasons and all these kinds of behavioral tics that we have. But you make a good point. I mean, the other big thing about that Kahneman came up with is it's people are more averse to suffering a loss than they are elated by a win. And again, that makes evolutionary sense, right? If you've got a 50-50 choice to make and you're not risk averse, if you don't care, then half the population is going to die going down the wrong road. You know, they're taking unnecessary risks. So, you know, we've evolved to be very risk averse. And that plays out in the share market. You suffer a loss, you're more likely to walk away from the share market than to realize that something it's the regression to the mean will happen, and you're more likely to regain your losses if you stay in the market.
Yeah. Yeah, he said that 98% of our thinking is done by fast thinking, and that 2% is slow, deliberate thinking. And, you know, it's hard to fight that. Now, very hard to fight it. Our brains are designed to push us in one way, which is why I'm grateful. I was going to say, Daniel Kahneman was a genius up there with the caliber of a Tony Kynaston. Like, he really... No, but
damning him with faint praise, that's for sure.
The thing about, I say this all the time, but one of the things that I'm grateful for QAV for as a system is it enables me to avoid all of the downfalls of fast thinking. It provides guardrails for decision making when it comes to investing.
You know? Yeah, you think about the framework first, and then all you focus on is implementing the framework, not thinking of. You can think about it, but you don't think about it on the fly. You regression test and you test going forward on paper, and then you implement a change.
And it prevents you acting on gut feeling or instinct or fear or greed. Mm-hmm. All of the things that our brains have been designed to act on, aren't really good motivations when it comes to long-term success in anything, probably, but particularly investing.
And the market is a harsh tester of those things. Like, it's always going to throw you tests and curveballs. You know, like, I've just suffered a loss. What should I do? If you haven't got the answer before the loss occurs, it's going to be really hard to work it out before the market opens and decide what to do. You've got to have the framework and the plan already in place. And all you're doing is using your 98% of your brain to implement it without thinking.
Yeah.
It'd be like playing golf, right? You're out on the course and you're having a bad day, pretty hard to think about your swing and re-engineer it and get it right and then go back to system A thinking for the rest of the round. You've got to go to the range, get a lesson, have someone have a look at what you're doing, think about it, grind it out, and then go to the golf course and turn your system B brain off and just use muscle memory to play golf. It's the same sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, moving right along, Tony, we haven't done a Morgan Housel for a while. I pulled out a Morgan Housel because we have no questions today, and I was trying to figure out how to stuff this stocking full of gifts. The two that I'm going to use today, one is the one we all know, Pareto Principle. The majority of outcomes are driven by a minority of events, but the inverse, you know, you love Charlie Munger, always be inverting, as opposed to Alec Baldwin in Glengarry Glen Ross, ABC, always be closing, we'll always be inverting. Sturgeon's Law, 90% of everything is crap, which is the inverse.
Theodore Sturgeon, the sci-fi writer.
Was it?
Yeah. Yep, Ted Sturgeon.
90%. He was talking about sci-fi, wasn't he, at the time?
Yeah, no, 90% of everything. A lot of sci-fi writers I used to read when I was a kid, they were great commentators on society. Okay, they dressed them up as, you know, interplanetary travelers or whatever and founders of new colonies, but they were fantastic observers of our society.
Well, according to Wikipedia, Sturgeon's Law, or Sturgeon's Revelation, is an adage stating 90% of everything is crap. It was coined by Theodore Sturgeon, an American science fiction author and critic, and was inspired by his observation that while science fiction was often derided for its low quality by critics, most work in other fields was low quality too, and so science fiction was thus no different.
Yeah, true.
And, you know, we say the same thing about stocks, right? Mm-hmm. 90% of the stocks out there as an investment are crap. Like QAV is designed to weed out the crap, and then we just focus on what's left. Crap by our definition of what a good
investment. But they are crap. I mean, something like 3/4 of the stocks on the stock market don't make a profit, right? So if you're buying an ETF, I'm always surprised at how well index investing is done, given there's so much crap out there that you're buying when you buy a basket of stocks. Luckily, they're usually market weighted, so you're getting the ones that are making money and have large market caps, but you still pick up a lot of crap in there.
Daniel Dennett, the philosopher who I want to punch in the face whenever I listen to him talk about compatibilist free will, but that's another point. He once said, 90% of everything is crap. That is true whether you're talking about physics, chemistry, evolutionary psychology, sociology, medicine, you name it, rock music, country western, 90% of everything is crap. And I think about this in terms of AI too. Like, people are getting up in arms about the quality of AI art or AI writing, right, or AI music, which is still very early days. But even as it gets better and better and people are using it as a tool, I say, 90% of it is going to be crap. 90% of art, music today that's generated is crap. That's just, I'd never heard it. Well, I had, but I'd forgotten that it was actually Sturgeon's Law. But yeah, it's true. 90% of everything is crap.
Yeah, and Pareto, I have a story about Pareto, how he came up with Pareto's Law. From memory, I could have this wrong, he looked at the tax returns of whatever country he did it on. I think it was Germany or maybe Italy, and worked out that, 80% or 90% was of the tax income was being paid by 10% of the people. And then he applied that to everything. He went and got the heights of people in the country, and the same thing happened, that, that there's a bell curve, and it's actually the Pareto's Law is the inverse of the bell curve, right? It's telling you that most of the stuff is going to be in the middle of the bell curve, most of the contributions to anything, but the tails, particularly the tail on the high end of the bell curve, is going to provide all of the heavy lifting. If you lay out a bell curve in a different way, then you always get the Pareto principle happening. It's 80-20. 80% of the effort or 90% of the effort comes from 10 or 20% of the people. It's heights, it's tax paid, it's all sorts of different things.
Well, according to Wikipedia, in 1941, management consultant Joseph Duran, the founder of Duran Duran, developed the concept in the context of quality control and improvement after reading the works of Italian sociologist and economist Vilfredo Pareto, who wrote in 1906 about the 80-20 connection while teaching at the University of Lausanne. In his first work, Cœur d'économie politique, Pareto showed that approximately 80% of the land in the Kingdom of Italy was owned by 20% of the population. Mathematically, the 80-20 rule is roughly described by a power law distribution, also known as a Pareto distribution, for a particular set of parameters. Joseph Duran, a Romanian-born American engineer, applied the observation that 80% of an issue is caused by 20% of the causes to quality issues. Later during his career, Duran preferred to describe this as the vital few and the useful many, to highlight that the contribution of the remaining 80% should not be discarded entirely. And I think about it in terms of even, QAV, like the things that we measure in QAV, you've identified as being principles or measurements that can contribute to the long-term success of a stock. But even within that, we feel that there's probably two or three things that carry most of the weight, like PropCAF, right? PropCAF is probably the big one.
Yeah, definitely.
Part of the thing that we're hoping to get out of the regression testing that I've been working with Matt Walker on is to test a lot of those things.
Well, to reweight the checklist, exactly. I mean, currently most things are a one or occasionally a two or a minus one, but that doesn't reflect the weightings of each thing and its contribution to the checklist. There will be an 80-20 rule applicable to the checklist for sure. I came across Pareto twice. First of all, in a book called The History of Risk Against the Gods, where it kind of starts off with Pareto. It's an excellent book. But the second thing was you know, I did a lot of work with customer data, setting up customer databases, but both Shell and Coles Myer back in the day, back in the sort of 90s. And one of the tenets of customer marketing was, if you don't have a view of your customer, every transaction is a separate transaction. You don't know who your best customer is. So how do you know how to market your store, lay out the store to appeal to more good customers? Oftentimes, the local store manager would know roughly who that was, but a lot of times, it was just an absence of data. And so the first thing I'd do once we collected data and did our analysis and worked out who the best customers was, is I'd go into a presentation with the big wig and I'd say, you know, who do you think the best customer is for Shell, for example? Oh, well, it's this and that. And invariably, the CEO would think the best customer looked like them. You know, they drive a big European car and they live in the eastern suburbs and they, you know, fill up because it's got a big tank and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no. In Shell's case, the best customer actually was a trucking company, because they like had a Shell card that went up and down the eastern seaboard and all their drivers filled up on that. And I said, so, you know, are we gonna do anything for this company? Oh, well, that's just an outlier. So you go, okay, who's the next best customer? Well, it's someone who buys all their tires from Kmart Tire and Auto. Are we gonna do something for them? Or from AutoCare, sorry, in Shell's case. No. And so you know, the same thing happened in Myer. I presented to my MD and I said, who's your best customer? Well, it's a young, fashionable 20-year-old, you know, who wants to be fashion forward. And I said, actually, it's a 50-year-old office worker, female office worker. No, that can't be right. Yeah, it is. And, you know, they're shopping in the lunch hour and they like to buy a cheap handbag and stockings. No, that can't be right. So like the whole store's, the whole strategy for Myer was to be fashion forward, but really it should have been providing cheap handbags and stockings to middle-aged women. So there was just such a eye-opening experience to be able to do the Pareto analysis on customers, and it was such a hard thing to get management to buy into when you showed it to them,
because 80% of the managers are 90% of the managers are crap.
Yeah.
Sturgeon's law applied to management.
Certainly when some of the places I worked at, yes, definitely, yeah.
Well, it has to be true of
it does,
you know,
of everything,
yeah, you know, of everything, of employees.
Yeah.
I know it in my Microsoft days, we used to talk about it in terms of fixing bugs. Like, 20% of the bugs would solve 80% of the customer complaints. And also for writing code, I know that 80% of the code took about 20% of the time that you allocated to writing a program, but the other 20% of the code took 80% of the time.
Right.
And, you know, people would always get it wrong when they were trying to figure out a budget for time and costs for building code by thinking that the, you know, the 80% actually was going to reflect the 100% of the time it would take. And
that's why IT projects always, you know, take longer than people think and cost more, because they do an average on the bug fixes or whatever they're doing on the build rather than, you know, worrying about the Pareto principle.
It's that last 20% that gets you.
Yeah.
Getting that last bit right. Yeah, it's a fascinating, a fascinating principle that just does seem to apply in every area, both of them, Pareto and Sturgeon.
Yeah, but I always flip it over too and think that the Pareto principle is another way of expressing a bell curve. And so, you know, it's also the case, and the bell curve always reminds me of the Dunning-Kruger effect. If you ask a room full of people if they're good drivers, they'll all say yes. But they've got to, on average, be average drivers, right?
Statistically, they can't all be right.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, ASB, Tony. We don't own them, so do your best.
All right. Well, ASB is on the buy list. Austal Limited is the company, and it was a request from someone from last week, and it's a good company to look at. If anyone doesn't know who they are, they're a Western Australian shipbuilder. And now with large military contracts. So I first came across Austal in the early 90s when I took trips from Chute Harbour Whitsunday Islands anyway. And the ferry ride was Hamilton Island was the island I was thinking of, sorry. And the ferry ride was modern and smooth. And that was a big game changer back then. I don't know if you ever took a ferry before the large catamarans came into being, but it could be rough and you know, it could be tossed about. by the seas. But this one was incredibly smooth, and so I paid attention to it. Was a bit of a revolution in design back then. I've owned the stock on and off over the last 20 or 30 years, and it's back on the buy list now. I don't own it now. And I found it to be fairly volatile and news-driven. And it's because it's a manufacturer of boats, it can its fortunes can rise and fall depending on the tender winds it gets. And so you often see large movements in its operating cash flow because they have to, and if they win a tender, it's great news, the stock price goes up, but then they've got to invest in expanding the facilities to produce, you know, 9 or 10 ships for this tender, and then the operating cash flow takes a nosedive, and then when they get sold and eventually delivered, the operating cash flow is great again. So it does go up and down. And it reminds me a bit of the pulled pork I did on a company called Xtech a little while ago, last year or two. That company is now called Hicom, if anyone wants to look it up. But Xtech is a provider of personal body armor and helmets to police forces and military applications and armies and security companies. And it, again, has been a company with large swings in its cash flow, but also large swings in its share price driven by tender news. So if they win a tender to supply personal armor to a police force or an army, the share price goes up. Same thing happens a little bit with ASB. Having said that, it's been pretty successful over the years. And it originally, you know, back in the early 90s, it pioneered aluminium shipbuilding and large catamaran designs. And it's only recently they're getting into steel shipbuilding, which will be a new growth for them, I guess. But for more than 30 years, they have delivered 340 vessels to operators in 59 countries. A watershed for the company was winning the contract to supply the US Navy with what they call littoral vessels, littoral, which basically means, I think, means vessels which operate within the continental shelf, so close to shore. And you know, that you've probably seen photographs or in movies of the sort of large catamaran patrol boats that the US Navy uses. A lot of those are supplied by Austal. They are currently manufacturing 21 vessels for the Australian Navy for their Pacific Patrol Boat Replacement Project. And that work is being performed in WA. However, Austal has 7 shipyards in 5 countries, including in Mobile, Alabama, which supports the US Navy requirements. And for example, recently Austal Vietnam delivered a 94-meter high-speed catamaran to Trinidad and Tobago. So a lot of effort was put in by the company to diversify manufacturing around the world, and a lot was put into building the Mobile, Alabama plant to satisfy the US Navy's requirements for local manufacturing and production. So it quite an interesting history to the company. The flip side of having these military contracts is that it has an added benefit of making it harder for ASB to be taken over, as a new owner must be vetted by both the US and Australian military and governments. And this is kind of timely because a company called Hanwha, H-A-N-W-H-A, a South Korean shipbuilder formerly known as Daewoo, has lobbed a bid. And so today the share price has gone up, but not quite to the offer price of $2.82. And ASB management released a statement today that they are wary of opening their books to a competitor until Hanwha can prove that they are likely to obtain Foreign Investment Review Board approval in Australia, ADF and US government approvals. And that's where it's sitting. So the market has gone up for the share today, but not to the bid price because there is this question mark about whether the bid will go ahead. And it's conditional on due diligence. And ASB is quite rightly saying, well, hang on, you're a competitor of ours. We're not going to give you access to our books unless you can prove that this has a chance of actually being consummated as a deal. It's a timely time to do a pulled pork on this company. It's an interesting company and the numbers are good. So let me go through some numbers. Share price I'm doing it at is $220, which is pre-bid. And the share price is up today to 240 something. So people will need to do their own research on this. But 220 was less than the consensus target, but greatly above IV1 and IV2, which is 8 cents and 86 cents. Largely, I think, because the PE on this company is 148 at the moment, which we score as a minus one because it's its highest in the last 3 years. But again, that reflects the fact that they've been investing to produce new boats. And when those boats start to get delivered and the income starts coming in, they get their payback for it. So yes, we'll score on negative one for a high PE, but the PE won't always be that high. And in fact, the forecast earnings per share is 497% higher than the current earnings per share. So we score it as a two for that because growth over PE in this case is 3.36, and we're looking for 1.5. So reflects the nature of this business that, you know, they've done the investment and I'll get the earnings as the sales, as the boats roll out and the sales come in. Stock Doctor Financial Health and Trend is satisfactory and recovering. And I suspect recovering reflects, again, this cash flow bouncing around a bit, but I like recovering stocks. We give it a two for recovering and a one for satisfactory in our score card. The yield's only 1.36%, and so we can't score it for that. PropCap is 6.2 times, so it's on our list for that, gets a score. Net equity per share is interesting, $2.58, which is slightly higher than the share price, and perhaps one of the reasons why this bid's coming from Hanwha or Daewoo, as it used to be called. So it scores both on the book value price versus price, and of course, book value, it is less than book value plus 30, so it scores for that too. Directors hold 9% of the company, so it's a bit of a bugger. We can't score it for owner-founder because it does have an owner-founder, but it's not quite the 10% threshold we look for. But if anyone wants to fudge that one, I'd be in agreement with it, really. A chap by the name of John Rothwell has been in the aluminium shipbuilding business for 50 years, and he still sits as the chairman on this company, on the board, and has 9% himself. The other interesting thing I found out when I was looking at the share registry is that Tatarang has 19.34%. Do you know who Tatarang is, Cam?
No, I do not.
Twiggy Forrest's private office and investment vehicle. And so interesting, he does take stakes in other WA companies, the lights, and it's just below the takeover threshold. But oftentimes when an investor sits with 19.5% or thereabouts, they're thinking about a takeover of the company. So there could be a battle if this Daewoo bid or Hanwha bid continues. There is another stakeholder there with a large stakeholding as well. And that could be a blocking stake if Boogie decides that he's not going to sell. That could block the takeover as well, so it cuts both ways. It's a recent three-point trend line buy, so we score it for that. So all in all, on a quality basis, 12 out of 17 or 71%. And PropCap is getting up there at 6.2 times, so QAV score is 0.11. So it's on the bottom of our buy list, but it's on the buy list. Pros and cons for this company. One of the pros, I think, is it has really been a pioneer of advancements in shipbuilding, both from the catamaran design and the aluminium construction of the company. Having the owner-founder who's lived through all that as a chair is a good thing. And like a lot of companies on our buy list that we're finding more and more these days, it's attracting takeover interest from other parties. So at the kind of price it is, it's trading at below book value or about book value, it's attracting interest as well. On the con side, as I've outlined, the cash flow for this company is lumpy. So it comes on and off the buy list based on its operating cash flow going up and down as it invests to build more ships. And the share price can be influenced a lot by contract wins, which a lot of these military contractors are. And obviously the cash flows impacted by investment, like, for example, having to build a factory in the States to satisfy the US Navy tender regulations. And then the other con is if someone does take it over, it does need all these approvals from governments and defense departments to make it happen, which does make it harder to take over. So you don't see a takeover premium built into the share price of this company.
Did you read about their ASIC and ATO problems?
No. Enlighten me.
I've got an article from January in Market Index A sinking ship. City downgrades Austal's price target by 45%. Price target bumped down to $2.32 from $3.70 by City. And it says the downgrade comes on the back of Austal's latest earnings update published last Tuesday, which saw the shipbuilder estimate FY23 earnings of $58 million, down from a previously forecast $100 million. And it goes on to talk about Austal's expected $42 million loss in question relates to a 2021 U.S. Navy contract valued at US$198 million, which the company won to build two towing, salvage, and rescue ships. One point of possible uncertainty, Austal cited an earnings downgrade to $58 million from $100 million in Australian dollars, but also references a loss of $41.2 million in its latest earnings update. 2 years on from the contract's execution, a revised forecast of costs for the 2021 shipbuilding program has left Austal admitting it will cop a US$41.2 million loss from the contracts. This comes after ASIC took Austal to the federal court in June 2021 over the contract, given that Austal failed to disclose to investors it was going to make a loss on the contract. Austal landed in hot water even earlier in 2018 when it failed to disclose to shareholders the outcome of an ATO assessment which challenged the rosier outcomes of an Ernst & Young audit. Presumably, Austal's management team perceived the relationship value of the contract with the world's largest Navy forces to be of greater interest to the company than material gains, but apparently forgot to tell investors that. other issues too, quality issues. A 2022 report from Maritime Executive alleges the Independence class literal combat ship, Austal's premier combat vessel for the US Navy, had cracked hulls in nearly half of the existing fleet. Last year, the US Navy decommissioned Austal's USS Coronado after less than a decade. The ship once spontaneously caught fire on the ocean in 2013. Hard to spontaneously catch fire when you're in a large body of water, but it can be done.
Just ask ourselves.
So yeah. They have some ASIC and ATO issues in this. So and their price was pushed down by the forecast was pushed down by Citi, and I assume that's their price had dropped from $2.80 in July. It dropped down to $2.20 in August, and then down to $1.66 in October. It was creeping back up in January. It looks like this downgrade by Citi didn't really hurt its share price. It was trading around $1.90 at the time and kept going up to $2.20 and then dropped down in February. But anyway, I assume some of these problems of why it's been devalued from $2.80 in the middle of last year and why it's an acquisition target now.
Could be. I couldn't say. I don't know the company that well. And it could also be that they were gearing up to invest in making these naval boats in Australia. What was they say? It was 2029 vessels for the Pacific Fleet replacement.
I wonder if they're planning on making money out of that one, or it's going to make a loss out of it.
Well, I wonder if the one they made a loss out of with the US Navy was payback. It's like, we've cracked our hulls. Ah. This salvage boat, you better trim your price on that one for us. Make us clear.
Yeah, it could be, but it's the article suggested that the sort of costs had gone up, right?
Right.
So, that's what I read into that they'd won the...
Well, the cost going up would probably be taking a provision on the loss for the contract.
Right. Anyway... Austal ASB, it's on the buy list. So,
In fact, and somebody else likes it because it's under takeover.
Yeah. And the fact that it's recovering, as you said before, you know, we like that. Company that's had some problems but is digging their way out of it is often good on a QAV list. Thank you, TK. What did you say? What's the ADT on it?
$1 million.
Right. Okay. So just on the line for us to be a high ADT stock.
Right. Hmm. Yeah, it's pretty large. It'll suit most people who are listening.
And that's the end of the free episode of QAV for this week. If you're a new listener, I just should let you know how this works. So we have a free episode every week, runs for about half an hour. We have a premium episode also every week. It goes for another 30 to 60 minutes, depending on how many questions we get. It's where Tony answers questions from our club members. If you want to check out the premium episodes and all the other benefits of being a QAV club member, which is access to the checklist and the Bible and the private Facebook groups and the other comms channels that we have, invites to the dinners, Zoom calls, etc., etc., just sign up for the two-week free trial and check it all that stuff out. You can do that at qavpodcast.com.au. Look for the free trial button there. And if you like the idea of value investing QAV style, but don't feel like you have the time or resources to learn how to do QAV for yourself, think about signing up for QAV Lite. That's our relatively new service where we send you the stock tips every week. And then we also monitor those stocks in a portfolio. And if they become a sell, we email our QAV Lite members and tell them that it's time to sell that stock and what to replace it with. Check that out too. It's sort of a low effort way of doing QAV. Still better if you know how to do it yourself, I think, because Tony could get hit by a bus and then where are you? But while he's not, we can do this. So check that out, qavpodcast.com.au/light, LIGHT. If you don't want to sign up to any of those, just keep listening to the free episode. And if you have any questions, shoot me an email. You'll find that on our website too. All right, have a great week and good luck with your investing. The QAV podcast is a production of Spacecraft Publishing Proprietary Limited, authorised representative of AFSL 520442, AFS representative number 001292718. Please don't make any investment decisions based solely on listening to this podcast. This is presented as general advice only, not personal financial advice. We don't know your personal financial circumstances. Please see a financial planner before making any investing decisions.